What is going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. First, go follow me on all the socials at Kojak Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to support the show, I have all the links in the show notes, but I don't know why we do this every episode, every podcast. It's like you hear it every time, but all my links, if you want to support it financially or whatever, they're in my show notes and on my link tree. And I'm trying to think of anything else that you have to say when you start a podcast episode. I think that's it. Go follow me. Yeah. So today's show will finish up the history of central banking. And if you missed like the first one or two, I would recommend go listening to them because I think it gave me awesome insight into how much the banks have truly just ruined everything. And I know we like all know that we talk about the Federal Reserve and how evil it is and how evil central banking is. But I never realized the opposite. When there isn't a central bank, how prosperous people are. And you can see why they want this, because as all these other examples that I went over before, Rome, France, England, America, prosperity was at levels that would be unattainable today, unrecognizable. You could not hit those levels today. And the usury system, the debt-based system, literally enslaves you. That's as simple as that. Like, you enslaves your government. I mean, there was times, I'll finish at the end of the show, but with Libya and Gaddafi, he was giving, every time you got married, you would get fit, or when you got married, not every time you got married, because that would probably be a scam there. But when you got married, they would give you $50,000 for marriage to start off your life. You had free housing, free medical, all this stuff, because they had their own bank. What happened to Gaddafi? Well, the media labels him as a murderer, a communist, or whatever phrase they like to use at the time, and they killed him. So that is how far they're willing to go. And just a quick overview. I put all this in my notes about the last show. Roman Empire, you had honest senators. Just like any democracy, any republic, it starts out great. You have people that represent your beliefs, that want the best for you, all this stuff like that. Corruption seeps in. People realize, oh, I can gain on this, on becoming a political leader. They do. The corruption sets in. Usury comes back. People lose, or poor, poverty, crime. The cities are disgusting. Caesar comes in, cleans it all up, bans usury. And then the Roman Empire, as we know it, explodes. It grows exponentially. Then again, corruption happens. Usury seeps back in. 1/3 of all the land, all the wealth was held by the Catholic Church, which they stored behind Constantinople walls, 12 or 20 feet thick walls. And they hoarded the wealth. And then the rest of the wealth was all owned by 10 families. You can see a lot of similarities with that and with America. There is no, you aren't going to get into the top 1%. Our free market that people love to talk about, it's not a free market. Good. You want to be the next Jeff Bezos? I guarantee you can't do it, because it's not, the system is made for us to be impoverished, relying on the government. That's what they want. Keep you good little slaves, and you just do your part, never stand up, never question. And then we talked about England. It was the same story. And in England, which was so, this fact blew my mind. And then we'll get to the new show, but I just wanted to go over like a little bit of the old stuff. In England, usury comes horrible. They ban usury, the Magna Carta gets signed. And for 400 years, all of those beautiful cathedrals, all the things that we say Tartaria built, and whether that's real or not, whether you believe that, I don't care. But I don't know what I believe, so it doesn't matter. But regardless, all these beautiful churches are built because the people are only working 165 days a year, and the rest they're off. And with all this time off, what do? They've got, they go with their passions. They're building these beautiful, soulful, amazing buildings that can never be duplicated today because they were working 165 days a year. They also, peasants, and I think this is probably part of the scam too. They try to say like, oh, those peasants back then, they barely lived. Yes, a lot of babies died in childbirth in those first 5 years. But once you made it past that point, they had a highest standard of living of Europe for the next 400 years were those peasants. They died, like, that was how good their standard of living was. Yes, there was no televisions, but these people, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And then they passed the Bank of England charter, sneak it through a tonnage bill act, just like our the way our bills are set. It was like at the bottom of the page, 20% of their House of Commons couldn't even read. So they said, oh, we're just going to tax the big ships, big businesses. We're going to tax the big businesses just a little bit more to help fund our war with France. And then they snuck that in the Bank of England charter. Now is the end of England. That was 1690. Prosperity ended. The churches ended. The building of these magnificent structures all ended because of usury. And that's literally how powerful it is. And we talked about America is the same thing. The Revolutionary War, was it fought because they were taxing tea? Is that why? Oh, yes, that's why. Tea was the reason why men risked their lives and because they couldn't get a vote in England. No, that wasn't why. America was in the most, for 200, 100 years, prosperity. Anyone that came here, if you worked hard, you became prosperous. They had their own script, a no usury based system. And what happens again? Oh, well, the Bank of England, you know, they don't like it when you have a bank that's not charging debt-based slavery. So they sent millions of dollars of counterfeit colonial script. Well, after 2 years, people realized, oh my God, all this script could be counterfeit. It went to 2% of its original value. 2%. People lost everything. They starved. They died. They lost everything they worked hard for by coming to a new land because some bankers were like, hey, I'm not getting my cut. I mean, that's how sick and evil these people are. And then last thing that we talked about was Napoleon, my man, a true G. France had the same issue. They were fighting England. They didn't have a central bank. Bank of England counterfeited all of their currency before Napoleon, crashed the markets. It was worth a half of they lost. And then when everything crashes, what do the bankers do from these central banks? They swoop in like a parasite and they buy up everything, pennies on the dollar. And they're just transfers of wealth. They did it with Schmovid. They did it anytime there's a big event. It is a transfer of wealth. It's a scam. 9/11, all those guys, they shorted all the airline stocks because they knew it was going to happen. It's the same thing. It's the exact same thing. And it's just huge. If you're in the know, you make millions. If you're not in the know, like us, you could lose everything. And that's the point of central banking. So we're going to finish what we started tonight, the State Bank of the Russian Empire. Now, this is going to be like maybe a little difficult. I always say I'm flirting with monarchy. And this book kind of proves my point, but I know it could be a little biased. And if you don't believe that, I don't care what we're all just trying to find the truth. I always say this, but if somebody you listen to knows all the answers, dude, you're listening to the wrong person because we have no idea. We have no idea. We speculate, we make guesses, and some guesses are better than others. But anybody that is so certain about their beliefs or like that they're right, dude, we know so little, so little. Even what we read could be totally wrong. Yo, Wheeze, hey, Wheeze Plato is going to be on the show Sunday, but if you got us, we might have to reschedule. And so we'll reschedule, dude, anytime. Don't worry about it. But the State Bank of the Russian Empire. And let me pull up, I didn't do the photos today because I've just been too busy. And I want to pull up so I can share the screen if I want to. All right. So in 1815, there was this big Congress to help settle this is almost a daily show now. I know, Brian. Well, this week, you know, I go and I try to schedule on when Miss Liv Allen's working. So when she works 3 days, then I try to do three. But in 1815 in Vienna, there's this big Congress to help settle the issues from the French Revolution, otherwise known as the Freemason Revolution, because just so you know, every revolution in Europe, I know I've said this, but just in case you forget, has been accepted. They brag about being behind the revolution, the Freemasons, killing of Franz Ferdinand. That was the Black Hand. That's the terrorist group that killed Archduke Franz Ferdinand. Supported by, they were also Freemasons. They just were also Black Hand members. French Revolution, Thomas Paine. I think he went over there. The Freemasons paid for his trip and got him over there to help create chaos and good rhetoric to inspire the populace to slaughter their monarchs. So that's what Freemasonry is. Anytime that somebody says, oh, Freemasonry is not bad. No, I'm not saying like the people in it, you know, like I'm sure a lot of our grandparents were Freemasons because that was like the cool thing to do. But the organization in itself it's absolutely demonic and evil. So anybody that tells you that that's not true, I would have a lot to say. Oh, dude, all these comments. I've had a tab up. Didn't see Carl. What's up, Brian? Oh, you guys are so nice. Always stopping by. I think Liv Allen might be watching too. So Liv, thank you for watching in the other room. All right. Oh yeah. So 1815. And of course, at this big meeting to settle the French Revolution, Meyer, Amschel, Rothschild, he's behind the scenes pulling his puppet strings. Already they've been able to purchase all the powerful politicians, all of Europe at this point, 1815, all of them except Russia were indebted to the Arkid bankers. And the Arkid is Rothschild for anybody that doesn't. I try to use that because I feel like there's like some algorithm on Twitter that's going to like grab me and send even more people to try and get my show off of YouTube for mentioning their name. But yeah, yeah. So Tsar Alexander I, another G, another awesome guy. He refused to comply with the central banking. And I just want, I talked about Andrew Jackson last episode, just how amazing that was. But think about that. Like the central bank existed in a lot of these places in America at this time. And Jackson, he stood up against one of the most powerful, more powerful than any army, more powerful than anything the world has seen, this banking power. And a man was able to stand up, had two attempts on his life and say no, because he wanted the best for his people. It's honestly like admirable. They don't make men like that anymore. Could you imagine any politician today saying, this is wrong? I know that a lot of people that stood up against the banks have been assassinated in the past, but I know that this is the right thing. I need to say no. I mean, just so amazing. The politician in Louisiana or whatever, another guy, he was killed. I mean, just so many lone gunmen. I think we talked about that last episode too. Everybody that stands up against the central banking, they get killed. They get killed. Abe Lincoln, even though he's a horrible tyrant, I talked about this with Don last night, he stood up against the central bankers. Eventually he did. Maybe he had a change of heart. I don't know the purpose of why he made the greenbacks, but he tried to make a debt-free currency. Gets killed. JFK prints the silver certificates, trying to put his back on a silver, you know, a debt-based or debt-free currency. He gets killed. So literally, Andrew Jackson, I mean, we could just go on and on and on of all the people that have been killed. But back to Russia. I'm getting off topic. So, also as payback from the Tsar Alexander I of saying no to central banking, for five czars of Russia, they were all assassinated or killed by in some way by central banking cabal, our kids. So 1860, the founding of the state Russian bank of their empire of Imperial Russia in Russia, it minted and printed nations coins, notes, regulated money supply through commercial banks, provided industry and commerce with low interest rate loans. Like when I say low, dude, what's up, Josh? Thanks for coming in. Banned banks and Freemasonry. That dude, yes. And now today, I don't know. I'd be interested in what you guys think, because Freemasonry obviously isn't as powerful now. So I don't know where that, if that secrecy and like that, those beliefs just bled into the CFR or bled into the Committee of 300 or the Trilaterals. But see, you know, the Freemason, obviously that's kind of gone. So I'm sure they're just an ever changing, you know, at one point it might've been the Knights Templars, and I don't know what it's at now, but I'd be interested to hear what you guys think about what, like, is there a secret society that's as powerful as the Masons were today as where they were in the past or not? But yeah, so Alexander I, and he said, I'm not doing a central bank. 1860, they make a state bank. It gives commerce low interest loans. You want to start a business. You want to be a farmer. You want to, I don't know, make gunpowder, whatever. You need capital to do that. And your government says, yes, this betters our nation. This is promoting industry. Of course you can have the loan. Of course we trust you to pay it back. And you know what? You're not going to have to pay back you're not going to pay back a 10% annual increasing loan interest rate. You pay 0.5%, 1%, this number that, and the rules a lot of these leaders would do is that the interest rate could never exceed the principal that you took the loan on. Dude, England is still paying the interest from their central bank, from the Hundred Years' War, from the Boer War. They are still paying the interest back 150 years later. 150 years later, they still can't get. And no one, if anybody, if people, the public stopped memorizing like how many hits Alex Rodriguez, I know he's retired, I'm just making a light joke. If they stopped memorizing how much LeBron James scored in 2019 and they just took 5 minutes to watch either this show or any show about the central banking scam, there literally there would be chaos. But yet with Bread and Circus, people just they don't care. They don't care. Their lives are, they don't understand why life is bad. They blame the Democrats or the Republicans, not ever thinking, oh my God, maybe, you know, high interest rates is a horrible thing because it said so in the Bible and for thousands of years, but yet it's all right now. We're so evolved, we're going backwards. So, but Russia had these vast gold reserves, largest in the world, possibly. They didn't know Asian gold reserves yet. So, but it exceeded banknote issue by 100%. And by 1914, they're not a central bank. They are a country, a state country bank. They had become the biggest loaning institution in Europe. And not surprising, Russia had the lowest national debt in the world because, again, they're creating their own money. They're not charging crazy interest rates, et cetera, right? By 1914, 83% of the interest and the amortization, and I looked that word up 2 days ago because I didn't know what it means, but now I forget, but of the national debt was less than 2% was funded by profits of the Russian state railways. So all of their like small loans and stuff like that, all the debt that they're taking out money to loan people and to pay for stuff that the government's in charge of, they're paying for all of it, by charging nominal fees on their, Josh said some actor took a shit in Johnny Depp's bed. That's more important. Exactly, dude. You see how much people are obsessed with this stuff? It's like, dude, why? I know it's entertaining and we all need entertainment and light things to enjoy. But to put all your, you know, to spend hours watching these people, I don't get it, dude. It's exhausting. It's exhausting. But yeah, they paid for all their debt with just charging a small fee on their railways. By 1916, the length was 100,000 kilometers. The Russian commercial canal tonnage was 11 million. It exceeded the British merchant tonnage, which was 10 million in 1916. I had this thought, Russia's always been this dark, gloomy place, you know, Soviet Union, communism. Dude, Russia was the king of Europe, the king. They dominated in every avenue, and we're going to get into all the avenues. But in 1916, the heyday of the British Empire, I guess towards the back end, but still they're the top dog of the world. They had more commercial transportation, more goods and services being traveled on their railways than Britain, who was the, you know, the king of the seas essentially. And they were doing more stuff because they didn't have a central bank. When you don't have debt, invisible chains locked on everybody, amazing things happen. So back to, but 1861, Tsar Alexander, he abolished serfdom. So 30% of the population at that time were, you know, renting land from a lord or whatever and farming on it that's how they paid for everything. So he abolishes it in 1861. By 1914, little land remained in the possession of Russian estate owners. He knocked off the 1%. He knocked them off. He said, this isn't fair. People deserve a chance to survive. And he stopped it. It's just so hard for me to believe because I haven't seen a leader that cares about anybody in forever. And if they do, they get killed. Not in America, at least. There has been nobody that's cared about us, that's wanted the best for us. In 1913, 2 million families had the opportunity to acquire these farms. 19 million acres allotted to the lower socioeconomic people from the Tsar. 19 million. He just gave it to them. The Peasant State Bank, the greatest and most socially beneficent institution of land credit in the world, granted loans at a low rate of interest. See, all of this sounds amazing, right? It sounds perfect. It sounds like a place that doesn't exist. And it did. It's all real. And I'm going to even go into more facts. But this is exactly when things are this great, when prosperity is too high, when people are just a little bit too happy, they can just survive without taking insane debt and loans and they can live their free lives. Well, central bankers, they don't like that, dude. And if anyone's a little too happy, you better believe your government's getting cooed. And that's obviously, we know that is what's going to happen. But agriculture was so good by 1913, Russia became the world's breadbasket. It produced more wheat than Argentina, Canada, US combined by 25%. I mean, I can't even imagine how much that is. Russia had 37.5 million horses. They had more than half the horses in the world. And obviously in 1913, their cars were around. I don't even know. But horses are very important in 1913. Russia had over half of them. Do they have the largest population? No. Do they have the largest land space? I bet they're close. I don't think they do. Maybe somebody would know that, especially 1913 Russia. I don't know how big it was, but regardless, they produce 80% of the world's flax, 50% of the world's eggs. Coal production from 1913 increased from 259.6 million in 1885 to 2,159 million by 1913. Like an insane. So it went from 259 to 2,000 million pounds of coal in from their start of their state bank to 1913. Cast iron, 25 to 1,300 million pounds of cast iron stuff. Petroleum, 490 million pounds to 600 million pounds. Everything is exploding. That's the point I'm making with all these statistics, and we're almost done with them. Industrial production, Britain with their central bank, their industrial production grew at 1% per year because they earned debt slavery. America, a little less debt slavery, 2.5% a year. Russia was growing at 3.5% a year. I mean, these dudes were murking the world, dude. They were dominating, showing you just how powerful humans, us, a regular public, can be when they're not indebted to with stupid interest rates that are meant to enrich the rich. The last 20 years of imperial rule, the increase in gross domestic product increased 10% yearly. I think we just lost. I think our GDP went down finally for like the first time and like a long time by 5%. They were increasing 10% a year for 30 years. Oh my God. All of this was possible because of the Russia State Bank creating people's money without interest. It's just, you can't even fathom it, dude. As opposed to the rest of like the first world who allowed their central banks to be parasites and enter and thieving. Russia saw growth that was unparalleled to anything we had ever seen on this planet, dude. I mean, just amazing. Should be by 1912, Russia had the lowest rates of taxes in the world, even though they have everything is up compared to the rest of Europe. America, they are kicking the hell out of everybody. They have better industry, better roads, better government, better courts, better at literally everything. I got an awesome quote that I'm about to read. And they had the lowest taxes. So I think, what is Joe Biden's most recent quote? If we increase taxes, that'll help inflation. They're not related. I don't know what you're talking about. But this is kind of a point to libertarians, anarchists, that taxes, you don't need high taxes to have beautiful roads, beautiful bridges. I mean, look at them. We have pretty high taxes here. And I think something like 4% of our bridges are stable. The rest are in desperate need of repair, collapsing at an insane rate. And does anyone care? Does anybody say, you know, I run on the ticket, I am going to fix our infrastructure. I am going to, no. Let's just talk about Roe versus Wade. And let's talk about Ukraine and giving them $40 billion. People should literally be up in arms. And I said this last episode, but all of the people that are here and that listen and in this little community, we are the counterculture. We are the people that are brave enough to not just say, oh, like an NPC, shake my head. The reason why this is going up is because of Putin. That's why inflation. Oh yeah, it's because of Putin. And then you tell people that like you're knowledgeable. It's scary to be by yourself, and all of you people do it. So just awesome. Oh, and I put long live the king, my friends. Long live the king. We'll see. Maybe I'll get all of you guys to agree with my view. Furthermore, there was no inflation in Imperial Russia. There was no unemployment at all, at all. Between this time period, the state's receipts rose from 1.4 million gold rubles to 3.7 million. 1914, they had a surplus in their budget of $512 million. $512 million they had a surplus because they didn't have a central bank. And $512 million with our inflation and from 1914, I couldn't even imagine what that's equivalent to in American money, in the billions at least. Could you imagine America being in a surplus of $200 billion? No, we will never. The last time we were in a surplus was probably right around, you know, Jackson and all those got maybe like 1900. I don't know the statistic, but I told that story a few times, but we were in $100 million debt. Jackson said, F you to the banks, pulled all of the U.S. deposits out of it. He ended his presidency with 50 million surplus. Russia was at 512 million in 1914. What's up, Barbara? Thanks for coming. And thanks, real John Doe. So foreign trade between exports and imports was in surplus. They were exporting more than they were importing by way, way much. Luckily for now, we still have that with food, especially we export, I think, you know, like something like 25%. I wouldn't want to be one of those countries that's an importer of food, because what's going to happen is there's going to be a food shortage like we see in Sri Lanka, where they're chasing politicians in the street. Love that, though. I do love seeing them chase the politicians in the street, but that's hilarious. Not hilarious that they're struggling for food, but hilarious that the corrupt slime balls, and I'm sure in Sri Lanka, I'm sure there's some honest politicians, but the top dogs, they're so corrupt. They've pocketed all their cash. I would love to see like, I don't know, Jerry Nadler running from a mob. I think that would be hilarious. Hypothetically talking as joking here. British lawyers concluded Russia's laws and judiciary was, quote, the most advanced and impartial in the world. Elementary education was free right up to university level, where nominal charges were charged. Between 1906 and 1910 in Russia, Imperial Russia, 10,000 schools opened. Renowned Russian universities opened. My last stand of Russia, child labor in Russia was abolished 100 years before it was abolished in Great Britain. Great Britain, the most, you know, oh, we're the most hoity-toity advanced civilization. We're the world superpower. Russia got rid of child labor laws 100 years before you did. They passed laws limiting hours of work. In 1912, social insurance was introduced. Labor laws were so advanced in Russia. President Taft said, the Emperor of Russia has passed workers' legislation which was nearer to perfection than that of any democratic country. People of all races had equality of status and opportunity unparalleled. His Imperial Majesty Tsar Nicholas II and his state bank had created a workers' paradise that was unrivaled in the history of mankind. I mean, wow, dude, wow, right? I mean, the U.S. president with a quote like that, that should alleviate any confusion if anyone says, no, usury is good. I know none of you guys would say that, and I know very few people, if they even knew what usury is. I bet if we asked 90% of the population, what is usury? Can you define it? They would have zero clue what the hell you're talking about, and they would never know that there is anything different ever that ever existed. They would just assume this is how life is. When you take a loan, you get charged lots of money. I mean, literally, loan sharking is illegal in America. We have loan. They're just organized loan sharks that they don't need to beat you up when they want to take your money. They'll just take your house or your car or whatever. You know, they'll garnish your wages. Crazy, dude. Crazy. Just so amazing. But all amazing things must come to an end. Like I said, the bankers do not like when you're happy. They don't want you successful. They don't want you prosperous. They want you dejected, on drugs, drinking alcohol while you watch and memorize how many shots LeBron James can make in a hoop in a day. Whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. So on 11/17, 1917, the Masons and a few others, bankers, financed the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. What I would say is how does a prosperous nation that is kicking the hell out of Europe, dominating in every avenue, how do you inspire them to revolt? And I think it's probably pretty simple, right? You run a propaganda campaign that's financed by bankers who already, they're so advanced, they've been counterfeiting other countries' cash to cause chaos. But how do you inspire the public? You just start putting out, oh, you're not free. You're not free. It could be even better. It could be even better. And you don't recognize if people didn't travel a lot then, if you don't recognize how blessed you are, you start saying, yeah, I could have more life, or I could have more money, or I could have more happiness. And people are inherently good. They trust. The public and normal people, they trust. They're not evil people. They wouldn't expect somebody to be evil to them. And so they believe you when it's somebody that seems to be an expert or authority figure says, you guys are being tricked. You're being hoodwinked. Yes, you have food and free college, but it could be even better. And then one person just sets it off. And it was years of propaganda, by the way. Like the Bolsheviks were being funded by Germany. They're being by the German bankers. They're being and even the top generals, they're being funded by British bankers. I mean, it was, 10 years of straight propaganda of the Bolsheviks until they were able to do this. But the Bolsheviks, what the bankers funded that Bolshevik Revolution, 66 million Russians died. And I've talked about this story in the past, but they were so evil, the Bolsheviks. And this is how evil the bankers are. The blood in the Imperial Castle or wherever they resided, there was 2 feet of coagulated blood in the hallways, just thick, viscous blood, 2 feet just stuck because there was so much blood from all of the murder that all the drains backed up because of all this blood and influx of, liquid. And then it hardened. And that's like a horror movie. That's terrifying. And that's what our experts are. A fake elite people. That's what they funded. They have no, and we know this, but they have disdain. They're not even like ambivalent. They have a disdain for humans and prosperity. They need to be so powerful that they'll do whatever it takes. They will cause 2 feet of coagulated blood in a Russian czar's castle, filled with innocence and whoever that gets in the way. And that's what they'll fund. And American papers, did they call it out? Did they say, oh my God, the Bolsheviks, they committed so much violence? No, the media, just like our media today, played it down. They said, well, this is what the Russians wanted. Yeah, it got a little violent, got a little out of hand, but boys will be boys. All right. They're just horsing around. They're just acting a little, the moment got the best of them. But now they're free. Now they're free. With a king, you're not free. So the Bolsheviks, they overthrew the czars, and that was the end of prosperity for Imperial Russia. So I talked about this in the past, but the Soviet Union would never have happened, never, if it wasn't for the parasite class, that is the banksters. Wall Street, Germany, America, our tax dollars, or our ancestors' tax dollars, they all funded this. And it never would have happened without our funding, without the thievery of our tax dollars that they stole and gave to the Bolsheviks. None of this would have happened. They didn't have any funds. They're communists. They don't work. How do they have funds? They don't have any funds. I think, Lenin, Trotsky or Lenin? Trotsky. I think it was Lenin. Oh, God. Oh, it's Lenin. Oh, my God. I'm getting so confused. But yeah, Lenin, though, regardless, they've put him in America. He had a limo driver. He was unemployed, and he lived in a house with a refrigerator at a time when that was only for like the Rockefellers. He had a limo driver. When he went to Canada, he had $10,000 in his pockets, and they held him in Canada because in 1914, there was honest people And they said, this guy is a communist agitator. He's going to go to Russia and try and start a revolution. They held him, and calls were made from top generals. They got him out. They gave him, Woodrow Wilson gave him a passport, gave him an American passport, even though he was banned from entering Russia. They kicked him out. They kicked him out of Spain. They kicked him out of all these places because they knew what his goal was. And the United States gave him a fresh American passport, to essentially a fugitive. And yeah. So that's great. That's always good. So the Bolshevik Revolution never, and the Soviet Union never could have happened without our free market loving Wall Street parasites. And one guy I haven't talked about before, Maximum Litvinov. His real name is Meyer, Janoko, Majasiewicz, Wallach, Finkelstein, which is an insane seven-named name. I could see why he changed it to two, because Meyer, Janok, Majasiewicz, Wallach, Finkelstein is just doesn't roll off the tongue very well. Let's pull him up. Let me pull him up here so you guys can see. It's always the dude. It's always the ugly people. Always. That is who. Oh my God. Now you just gotta look up his name again, though. Maxim Litvinov, Soviet Union. All right, let me just share it so we can see. I'll put it here so I can read my notes. Sorry, one sec. Okay. Yeah. Here we go. This is a good photo. This will show you about the people that rob and change the world. They always look like this. I don't know if it is a mold that they mold people in, but they say, you're ugly enough. We want you. We want you to help overthrow the prosperity, and you're ugly, so we know you're going to do it. I truthfully think there is some tie, though, between ugliness, just people that look, you know, they don't care about how they look. They look disheveled, overweight, greasy, like this man looks. And there's something that ties them with being like a progressive person or this ideology that you know will ruin your country. Like all those feminists, when we did the feminist show, all disgusting. Oh my God. They I don't know how they even ever had a date in their life. And those are the people that try to install these progressive policies. There's something there. Like there's a connection between being ugly on the outside and having this like evilness inside you. But anyway, that's Max. This is the five named guy. He plays the huge role in destroying Imperial Russia. In 1901, he's arrested for 18 months for being ugly. No, that wasn't right. That's a joke. It's tough making jokes when it's silent. I need like a laugh track to hit a button so I can know if it was funny or not. But anyway, so he's arrested for 18 months. He escapes. 1903, he's trusted with money to finance and distribute a newspaper of Russian Socialist Democratic Party, printed where? In London. Oh, that's funny. Why would bankers want and fund you a paper of socialism? What? They're free market loving people. Why would they like socialism? Right? That's what a regular person would tell you. In 1905, he receives further funds from friends abroad, enabling him to purchase weapons in London. Who's giving him this money? I know. The same parasites that are giving all evil people money. His nickname, now this was crazy. This guy, and for people just listening, he's got a real round face, looks pretty fat, bald, not attractive, okay? His nickname, I think if anyone could take a guess, you're never going to guess what this guy's nickname was. Maxim Litvinov's nickname was Daddy. That was his nickname. Why? I have no idea how he got the name Daddy in 1905, but that was his nickname. Crazy, I know, but that was his nickname. He became the source of all funds, the treasurer of the party, and Lenin couldn't even overrule him. That's how powerful this five-named Finkelstein, Majasiewicz, Wallach, Rockmeyer, whatever, I'll just call him Litvinov from now on because I can't make this joke. I'll beat a dead horse with the long name joke. But he was more powerful than Lenin. And why was he? Because he was a representative of the R kids with powers that funded Lenin. All the people that gave Lenin his money, this guy was like the bagman, the go-between that would get the funds for the Soviet party, the Bolshevik party. Right, Wheeze Plato? I wonder if he gave himself the nickname of Daddy, or like, how did this come about? right? I don't get it. I would love to know more of how he obtained that name, but I don't know. Daddy Warbucks, Brian says. Kind of true, dude. He was. Where is Daddy Warbucks from? What movie is that? Somebody will responded. I can't, I know that's like, but anyway, so he knew the plan. He knew what the R kids were planning. He knew the goal of the Soviet Union. He didn't care about, you know, the workers taking the power back. No, he didn't care. He knew the central bank was the end goal. Annie, thank you, Carl. All right, Daddy War. Now I get it. I make the connections. Thank you. Thank you for that, Carl. Brian says he adopted little orphan Annie Rothschild. That is hilarious. That's a good joke, Brian. All right. So yeah, so he used Bolshevism to push the ball across the line to install the central bank. And like chameleons, dude, all these predator class, they're able to change their political views. We have good example, like Harriman. He was a Republican. No, he was a Democrat. Avril Harriman was a Democrat, but he's a billionaire. He's a cutthroat, disgusting slime ball, but he's a Democrat. And then I think like Brzezinski, I don't know. Then there's another guy who's a Skull and Bones member who's a Republican, like the Bush family. That's a good example. Another millionaire company. His mentors, Harriman, you know, like it's an incestuous, it's just a club. And they just say, all right, you're going on the R side. All right, you're going on this side. They don't care. And yeah. They're all evil. Like you can't be a billionaire or at this time a millionaire and believe in like workers' rights. That doesn't work, dude. That does not compute. It does. You can't be making children work in your factory 12-hour shifts and sleep in the same cot when one gets up and then say you're a Democrat, which believes in like workers' rights. And they really did that, dude. Kids in the Industrial Revolution, they orphans or just really poor families, they would put their kids in a canning factory at like 8 years old, and the kids would work, I'm not exaggerating, 8 to 12 hour shifts. They would share the bed with like their nighttime counterparts. So they would, and they said, the saying was like a bed never is cold because they're just switching every 12 hours. In 1908, the next 10 years, he resided, Daddy Warbucks here, Litinov. He was resided in London with the help of his quote unquote English friends. And you know, why would English bankers be friends with a communist? I don't know. He was getting cover jobs to continue his work as a spy. The spy intelligence agencies, even in this time, were very advanced. Like, I mean, I did a book on intelligence organizations in the ancient world, and spies have been a powerful thing for a long time, and they just got better at providing cover. But this is, we have countless examples of people that are like a reporter, or Harry Houdini. He's an example. He was a spy for the American government, and his cover was a magician. And that enabled him to travel around, he had access to the public that nobody had. And because he was a famous character, but he was a spy. He was reporting back on communist activities in Eastern Europe and in Europe. So after World War I, England demanded that all Russians return to Russia. Fair, right? Okay. Did Daddy Warbucks here, did he have to go back to Russia? Even though he's a felon, he's escaped prison, he's a wanted fugitive. No, he was exempted. They said, you're going to stay anyway. Be the Russian representative to England. He said, great. His first job, this was what Litinov's first move as the representative of Russia. He demanded that the Tsar's money, now this is sickening, the Tsar's money that was in the Bank of England be returned to Russia. Do you think, you know, the Bolsheviks are in power now? Work, power to the people, my friends, power to the people. The Tsar had over 100 million in like gold and stuff like that in the Bank of England. What do you think the English bank did? Did it give it to Litinov so he could give it to the Russian population, to the people that are now starving because of the communist revolution? No, they gave it back to Litinov. And where do you think he put it? To his buddies, the R kids. We never saw it again. And just to prove that fact, a long descendant of the Tsar's family, the one, like the very few that survived that horrible massacre. They tried to go to the bank because all they had their money in different banks, America, England, and, you know, 20 million here, 20 million there. They tried to get it because it's not anyone else's money. They shouldn't be able to collect it. They went to get it back. They denied them. They railroaded them in the trial. I don't think they even got to trial. They just got hammered with paperwork and lies and deceit. And so they gave away their family's wealth to a non-family member. What was the Tsar's crime? Is the Bank of England, I'm sure, has rules on this. What was the Tsar's crime that you weren't able to give it to the last remaining family member alive? They didn't break. Again, it's just a scam. 100 million. He then gets a... Oh, so yeah, then he gets arrested in England. So he goes back to Russia. So now he's a felon from two places. He returns to Russia, where he's focusing on the fast outflow of gold and jewelry leaving Russia. Because all these people that are involved in the communist revolution, they're stealing everything. The Bolsheviks, you don't deserve this. Oh, family heirloom of gold, this beautiful gold necklace. We're commies now. I don't know if you heard, it goes to everybody. We're all going to get a link of this. That's what's fair. And they were stealing everything these people had, everything. And also, while they're stealing all this gold, they're selling it around the world. So he helped secretly sell and transfer the gold to intermediaries to make sure it didn't end up in the hands of the actual owners. And after they washed, you know, I'm using this like a you would say wash money. After they washed the gold, he sent it over to the Arkid Federal Reserve Bank in America for storage. Again, it's incestuous. It's just so disgusting. Daddy sounds like a 17th century Pootie Tang cartoon. That's funny. And Brian says, love those Arkids. They are deviously determined. I totally agree, dude. Brilliantly evil. Brilliantly evil. And so he's helping hustle gold, send it into a store in the Fed. Millions of gold ruples float abroad without any customs payments, without any tax. They just snuck it in. Millions of pounds of gold and jewelry and melted silver and all this stuff. No taxes required to pay on it. That's so weird. I thought communists wanted to help everybody. In 1924, Stalin became the leader of the Soviet Union, but Litvinov feared no one. And Stalin, as we know, was notorious for just killing somebody that was at one time close to him and then airbrushing them out of photos. Litvinov was more powerful than Stalin. Eventually, Litvinov was allowed to retire, but he was untouchable, though he was surveilled by Stalin. And that's not the end of Daddy Warbucks here. In 1941, the USSR needed his help again with the Germans banging on the gates of the new Bolshevik government. So he gets sent to Washington as a Soviet ambassador. The Americans were concerned about giving money to the USSR because our general public said, well, we heard they're pretty violent and they hate capitalism and we like our life. Do we really want to send money to these people? Do we? And they were concerned. Well, Litvinov eased their concerns, and any politicians concerned that may have been nervous, he eased them, aka he bribed them. Had nothing, I'm sure, to do with his connections to the Arkids. Within a few weeks, our lovely government with our wonderful debt-based system, we printed him some money. We gave him a loan of $1 billion. Who pays the interest on that? Do the Soviets pay it? No. We're still paying for it. Don't worry. Weez players are the only good thing about Stalin is the mustache. And dude, that is a good mustache. It reminds me of who's the cop in Blue Bloods? My parents, old people love him. What's his name? He's got the thick mustache. He's he was in Friends dating Monica. You guys know who I'm talking about. I mean, and he's got a good mustache too. Old women love him. They think he's so attractive. Oh God. Well, whatever. Doesn't matter. But hopefully someone will know who I'm talking about. So we give him $1 billion. Cool. Then over the next four, $111 billion worth of supplies and services were provided by the United States for Soviet Russia. He could call the White House at any time, and FDR would see him immediately. That's shocking. FDR, I thought he's a capitalist. Well, if you didn't know, FDR was another banker bitch boy who created, I believe it was AIC, or he was on the board of AIC, American International Corporation. And what they did was, after World War One, they went into Germany, and I might be wrong on the name of the company, but they went into Germany buying everything up that were pennies on the dollar. Their stock, which was like sold to only like 1,000 people, the top dogs, it went rose to something like $100 a share. And at that time, that's a lot of money in 1922 to pay for a stock. And they killed it. They sold the stock when they knew, and they worked with the new German prime minister to crash their dollar. FDR was a disgusting human being. He's in the list of top 10 evil people that hopefully are burning in hell. And yeah, so he would see Mr. Litvinov here whenever he wanted. Both were stooges for the Fed and the Arkids. By 1941, international bankers organized the Bretton Woods Conference. This established a World Bank, the IMF, which would govern relations among nations and also maintain fixed exchange rates. Not in their white pages or their mission statement. They also helped to hide wealth that was stolen from Europe and Japan after World War II. Lovely, lovely organization, you know, stealing generational wealth that was incorrectly, wrongly stolen from families that had nothing to do with the war and Japan and Asia. So thank you, IMF, for hiding that wealth for everybody. And as we know, Americans dropped the Americans dropped the atomic bomb on Japan. I'm going to go with firebomb. Tom Selleck, Carl. Thank you. You're 2 for 2. Annie and Tom Selleck. Yes, Tom Selleck's the man with the good mustache that old women love. But yeah, so, we supposedly dropped this bomb on Japan. And I did an atomic bomb, why it's fake show. It's probably ways back, but I got photos and everything if you want to check it out. And I think the book is called The Nuclear Hoax, and it's written by an anonymous physicist. And he explains all about it, how it's not real. Last thing I'm going to say about the atomic bomb. There's the one photo of like of them dropping it on Nagasaki, I think. And that day they closed off the airspace. You know, they made a huge message. The Americans like, do not fly over Japan. You know, they sent this all out, all planes, everybody canceled. Well, Shockingly, this one little plane that had a photographer on it, they didn't get the memo. They didn't know. And they happened to be flying right over Nagasaki as the plane dropped the bomb. And then they saw it happen. They quickly turned their super agile 1944 airplanes that, you know, are doing crazy maneuvers, right? I'm joking. And they were able to snap the photos of the bomb. Right. Even though supposedly the blast radius, the airplane should have been destroyed, but it stuck in there. Right. Okay. Anyway, so we firebombed them, even though they're about to surrender. I'm sure that it had nothing to do with that. Japan also didn't have was resisting a central bank that's run by parasites. I'm sure that had no reason to why we destroyed an already surrendered country even more. I'm sure it had nothing to do with that. The bankers then had to work on the Soviet Union. Stalin, because they didn't have a central bank yet. Stalin's stash was black and dense. Bill Gates needs a stash. Dude, I would maybe give him some credit if he did have a crazy Tom Selleck / Joseph Stalin mustache. It's possible. I'd say, okay, I hate you, and I'll remove it like 1 degree on a 10-point scale of how much I hate you. So I'd be at nine. So the bankers... The Soviet Union didn't have a central bank really yet. And Stalin, though he was a very evil leader, allegedly, I honestly, I don't really know, but he was more of a nationalist as opposed to a communist. Yes, they had a communist system of government. Yes, it was super violent, but Stalin was a nationalist. So he loved Russia. He wanted everything the best for Russia. And that's the one thing that the bankers cannot stand is nationalism. They want you to sell your resources to everybody. And so this is kind of when it starts going bad for Stalin. So Stalin gets poisoned, and then he's allowed to die from a massive stroke as they provided zero medical care. And this happens in 1953. And after that, the Cold War was literally just a farce. There was no more like actual animosity or real danger. There's animosity, but no real danger. It was just a farce to launder money to increase the military industrial complex, as both sides, again, as we just said, were controlled by the bankers. The Soviet Union could not have lasted for 50 years if it wasn't for Americans paying through our tax dollars, through hidden grants and things like that, through the bankers. They're two wings of the same bird. We were not enemies. We were never real enemies. We were controlled by the same people. And I talked about this before. Harriman became like the Soviet Union representative. He was giving intellectual property. He was giving technology. He was giving loans. He was giving weapons. He was giving infrastructure, because all of their industry collapsed after the Bolsheviks happened. I mean, they were like their oil. We just talked about coal production in Imperial Russia, how high it was, and oil production. It all tanked. It went to like 10% of what it was. It was a mess. And so again, they could have literally not gotten off the ground if it wasn't for America. So some enemy, if they can't even survive, can't even start without our money. And that's in 1991, the Soviet Union fell. The bankers swarmed in, like they have done in Germany, like they have done in anytime there was a collapse, Italy, America, they come in, locking up Russia with the same system as the rest of the world, and a central bank gets started. So for 200 years, the czars resisted. They created one of the most powerful countries, a thriving country, the top dog of continental Europe. It was all undone. And the saddest part of that, I think, is that like people, they think the Soviet Union's evil, but they think if you talked about Tsar Alexander or the Romanovs to any person that maybe has like a small interest of history, their immediate action is bad. They think bad, evil, because it's a monarchy. And that's just the biggest trick of them all. Just like Napoleon, if you talk to Napoleon, you people would say, oh, he's short maybe, or oh, he was a tyrant, he was trying to conquer the world. These are all lies. They're all lies that are promoted by the central banks. So you would never think that how powerful and how prosperous these countries were without a central bank. They don't want you knowing that. They want your immediate reaction to be bad. So the Anglo-Boer War. So the 19th century, so all was undone. But the Boer War, that happened a little before the Bolshevik Revolution. But the 19th century monetary system was based on gold. And I talked about this last episode. You would think that sounds good, like gold standard. We talk about that in the conspiracy world, and it's still fine. But gold and standard is a rich man's money. Silver is the money of the people. When you have a gold standard, it leads to the powerful and the rich hoarding their wealth, because it's so expensive, as opposed to on a silver standard, it promotes exchanging of funds and a prosperous economy. Rome, they went to silver. I think Napoleon was silver, but regardless, that's the best one compared to, you know, a gold standard or better. And I talked about how the gold eventually went to the gold standard in Rome. The Roman Empire, one third of the wealth, as I already said, was held by the church, and one third of all lands, and the rest was held by these 10 families who became the black nobility. So regardless, though, in 1886, a new source of gold comes on the map. Gold, diamonds, silver, platinum, and it's discovered in South Africa. Oh boy, people are about to make some moolah. And so the new source of this wealth must be captured by the predator class, because that's what they do. They you cannot find prosperity without, or they want the prosperity. They don't give a shit about you. So streams of immigrants came to South Africa. Let me just pull up photos while I talk. So people that are so kind to watch me live on the screen here, I see we have something to look at. Let's find a good photo to keep us looking at. Let's see if we can find a cool one. All right, this looks cool. We'll keep this one up on the screen. Anyway, all right. So all these immigrants are coming in. The leading company that was starting to build mines was the Eckstein Group. And not only did this was a front for the Arkids. They gave the funding for the Eckstein Group. And not only did they help buy the mines, they also held a monopoly on dynamite, the Eckstein Group. So you can see you need dynamite to dig these mines. So they're brilliant. They're brilliantly evil. The Arkids, their groups, they not only capitalized on the actual metals, they invested in a dynamite company. I'm sure they charged a fair price. I'm sure there was lots of free market competition going on that allowed you to get the best deal on dynamite. No, obviously it was not. It's kind of as similar as San Francisco when they had the gold rush that didn't actually exist. The people that made all the money was the guy that opened the gold hunting store and selling gold hunting supplies. And he made a million. He was a millionaire because he set up the hype was created. He set up the store. And that's what the Eckstein group, you can think of them as like that. And then the press around this time also controlled by the Arkids and the Bank of England and all these bankers and by 1890s, the foreign workers and speculators, they outnumbered the Boers. Oh, this is such a good topic. This relates so much to what's going on today. So this story is literally what's going on in America. So hold on to your hats, ladies and germs. So you have this 1890s gold rush, all this gold. Foreigners are flooding this country, flooding your country, which South Africa at this time was German, Dutch. I think that's pretty much German and Dutch Christians that just wanted to farm in a very fertile land. They wanted to be left alone. They were not violent people. Okay. And then there's a small revolution in 1896 by the influx of foreigners. Oh my God, this is so crazy. So definitely listen to this. They're trying to overthrow the government that the Boers set up, the Transvaal government, which the revolution, thank goodness, failed at that time. It failed. So what does the Arkids do? They want these mines. They're sending all the foreigners in there to cause chaos. They're paying for these foreigners to get there. They're paying for agitators. Oh my God, what is this? What does this sound like? Oh my God. So they start this group to protect the Arkids do. They start this group to quote unquote protect the new immigrants into South Africa who are trying to capitalize on all this new wealth that's in the ground. And it was called the South African League. What types of protection did they need? Were they being hunted down, Arkids? Were they being killed in the street? No, they were being left alone because the Boers were literal farmers. So what are they protecting them from? Voter rights. Voter rights. Oh my God, can you imagine that? Can you imagine that these people, they didn't have good voter rights? Why didn't they have voting rights? Because they weren't citizens of the Transvaal. They weren't Boers. They were recently arrived immigrants. Do they deserve a vote in your country that your family has resided and built in? You think they're going to vote in your best interest or their best interest? How similar is that to us? How similar is that? It's like infuriating. And then, so the Transvaal, they had this rule. They said, because of this influx of foreigners, you must reside in South Africa for 14 years before you gain the ability to vote. Seems fair to me, right? You still could get a chance to vote in 14 years if you're here for honest purposes, you want to work hard, blah, 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 blah. 14, you don't deserve a right until you have been here 14 years to see how we do things so you assimilate to our culture, to our society. We have a way of life that we enjoy. We don't want it to change just because you're a newcomer coming from a new land, trying to extract wealth that was in our community. So the president in 1889 says, fine, our kids, you just threw a revolution 3 years ago, killed people for this, to protect these guys because I'm being, you know, whatever, racist, xenophobic, whatever terms the media even used back then. And so the British military, you know, he realized he's going up against a monster, a behemoth. And he says, fine, I will drop it from 14 years to 7 years. So after 7 years, you can vote and you can, you know, get involved in politics, blah, blah, blah. He says, I'm not happy. You're not happy. That's the compromise, right? That's what a compromise is. Well, the lovely man by the name of Alfred Milner, let's pull up Alfred Milner, who is one of the evil effing people in the world. Ugh, disgusting. Another good mustache though. Damn it. But anyway, Milner, We talked about him a lot during our War One episodes. Total scumbag, corrupt. He was the military arm of like Cecil Rhodes's Roundtable Group and part of the Arkid Circle. He was the military aspect. Cecil Rhodes was more of like the industrial aspect or entrepreneur aspect. But he controlled the military. He rose, whoever rose in the ranks of the British military, they had to suck up to Alfred Milner. And oh, this was great. Milner was so stupid. This is how much, this is the people that rule us. This is the people that rule us. Alfred Milner in 1908, right before World War One, they're trying to start World War One. Maybe even was during the Boer War, but machine guns had become a new thing. Okay. Machine guns, obviously that's a new weapon that can kill way more people than ever before at one time. His claim, what he taught at the military college was that the machine gun, just a fad. It's going to lose popularity. The way you win a war is a strong cavalry with swords. That's how you win a war, not machine guns. Do you think it mattered that his belief was led to the downfall of thousands of soldiers? Because he said, no, let's not invest in machine guns. Machine gun. We don't need it. We got a cavalry. No, he didn't ever see the danger that stupidity caused. But the 7-year compromise, Milner said to the president, reform or war. Now, what does this remind you of? It reminds me of the left saying, oh, it's racist to need an ID to vote. You know, it's racist to require identification to cast a vote in our country. Oh, you shouldn't have to be a citizen to vote. You should just have to reside in America, even if you came here illegally. Any person that cares about your own country, you would never do that, ever. You would never do that. That you can see how quickly you could create political chaos and turmoil and change in the way of living, blah, 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 by allowing everyone that just resides in America, no matter how they got here, a right to vote. And that's what Britain told the Boers. You're being racist. We just want your gold, but you're being racist. So we're going to say you need to let everyone vote or we're going to come slaughter you. And it's so funny too, how the elite like talk about, you know, the coastal elites talk about how, oh, it's harder for, you know, lower socioeconomic people in the inner city to get an ID. And it's hilarious that, and then people will parrot that, like, you know, liberal mom, wine moms, and they'll parrot that. No, they've never lived they've never been in the ghetto. I lived in this part in Philadelphia during my struggling years, 52nd and Parrish, which is right by Market Street for any Philadelphia people. I was the only guy. I was the only white person, and it was a very rough area. I lived in a recovery house there with all these older black guys, and they were great, great food. But yeah, you could get an ID. So, dude, there's people in like, they have events in the park where you just go and you can get an ID. There, you can just literally like go to the welfare office. They will help you do everything. They'll get it for you for free, especially if you tell them, oh, I don't know, I need to vote or something. I'm sure you don't need one in PA to vote. But these people, that's what they do. They're just so stupid. They'd be the first to call the cops. But yet they call Republicans or conservatives racist. I just find it very like amusing because they've never even seen what the rough parts of cities look like. But yet they're championing beliefs for these people that they've never met. They dislike, they despise, but I think they do it to try and like tell themselves, no, I'm not a racist. That's why I'm doing this. Cause I want to help them. So anyway, Milner was honest to his word, guys. In 1899, the British start to mass troops along the Transvaal border. The president of the Transvaal asked the queen, he said, please stop sending troops. I don't want a war. Like, we already compromised on the voting thing. Please, please don't do this. We just want to be left alone. 2 days later, on October 9th, war broke out. The Boers only had a part-time army. They were farmers. They were Christians. They were not pacifists, but you know, just good Christians. And they had a part-time army of mounted horsemen and they whooped the best military in the world. But dude, they kicked Milner, Mr. Cavalry over machine gun. They beat the hell out of them for a year. But then I mean, they were outgunned. They were outnumbered. They were poorly led. I mean, these guys aren't generals. They're farmers. And by 1900 onward, they resorted to guerrilla warfare because when you're outnumbered, that's the only option you have. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for saying I'm right. I like hearing I'm right. But thank you. He said he was right about the fake empathy for inner city. So they were out. They guerrilla warfare. An army of 6,000 Boers was able to anger and tie down over 450,000 British soldiers, trained soldiers. They caused them headaches and chaos beyond belief. I mean, a real feel-good story, honestly. But peace is signed in 1902. You think they kept the voting rule? No, they did not. It was a disaster for the Boers. By the end, this is how disgusting these central bankers, again, another example of what they did. Women, children were starved, raped, beaten by the British. Which is funny because 2 years earlier at the Hague Convention, Great Britain was all, listen, there's rules of civilized warfare. We're so hoity-toity. We don't resort to this silly stuff. Oh, really? Because you just inspired these men to rape, beat, and slaughter women and children. Isn't that funny? War crimes. War crimes is a joke, first of all, because war crimes are only charged on the person that loses. But yeah, so their convention that they were like, oh, let's have civilized warfare. They broke all those, clearly. They scorched earth. They scorched earth. They burned. Their homes were burned, razed, R-A-Z-E-D. Wells were poisoned. Poisoned. Cattle slaughtered. And like I said, women raped. 25 towns, 20 villages, churches burned to the ground. 155,000 women and children were herded into 46 concentration camps and housed in temperatures where temperatures fell below zero. 34,000 women and children died of malnutrition, poor sanitation, exposure. 81% were under the age of 16. 22,000 wounded, all sponsored by the Arkids, all sponsored by the bankers and the Wall Street of, you know, the bankers. But I find it interesting too about this was the first example, big example of concentration camps in the world was in the Boer War. That was done by the British and the Arkids. Just an interesting thing I thought that was very interesting because the Arkids, there's legends that they helped fund. Hitler had funding from Wall Street. Were the Arkids specifically funding him? I don't know, but you can see why that connection is interesting, that was the first time. And then 30 years later, you have a guy that's funded by the same group that did this in the Boer War. Where did he get that idea from? But it was all worth it, guys, because the Arkids and the Predator class, they got their gold mines. Looked into Stalin's Cannibal Island. I haven't, we've played it. See, this is why you better reschedule, buddy, because we got a lot to talk about. I'm just joking. All right. But the bankers won because the war cost Great Britain $222 million, adding $132 million of Great Britain to debt, to that Great Britain debt. And then this is our last chapter here. So there's this Commonwealth Bank of America of Australia. It was inspired by this guy, King O'Malley, which is a badass name. King O'Malley. Let's pull him up. King O'Malley. Oh, that's him. Yeah. So King O'Malley, he sees American Bank. He's found out the racket that is fractional reserve banking while working for his uncle's bank in the 1880 in America. So he says, you know what? I'm going to start a goddamn bank. I'm going to be crazier. I'm going to start a bank. And everyone said, what? Why are you going to start a bank? Where are you going to get the capital? That was one of the questions. He said, what capital? I don't need any capital. My capital is the entire wealth and credit of Australia. The bank was founded in 1912, established as a private bank, operated as a state bank. So at the beginning, O'Malley, he's not an evil guy. It's a state bank, but Russia had a state bank. If they're not charging usury, it's an amazing system. And Australia enjoyed one of the greatest eras of prosperity they ever had by providing government loans at nominal interest rates. It was like 2/3 of a percent a year. That's when I say nominal, that's what these state banks would charge. 2/3 of a percent, less than 1%. It would never compound or anything like that. So it enabled Australia to embark on a huge infrastructure build: dams, irrigation systems, transcontinental railroads, electric power plants, gasworks, harbors. You know, you got to dredge harbors. You have to dig them to make them deeper and wider and things. Roads, tramways. Farmers were financed $3 million at a similar rate. You're a farmer in Australia, or you want to be one? Here's money to get started. Grow well. Just pay us back when you get a chance. They made $4 million available to purchase 15 cargo steamers to transport their growing agricultural, that's another country, one of the few countries that exports food, Australia. World War I, they have $8 million for subsidized housing as well. Without usury, prosperity ensues. World War I cost Australia $700 million, but it was financed as a non-interest-bearing debt. So they put $700 million into World War I for a pointless war, but it was non-interest-bearing. So unlike Great Britain, who, as we just said, the Boer War took $222 million, $132 million of that was literal interest, like half the principal. As all good things, though, they come to an end, especially prosperity. And it ended in 1924 when a bribed British Prime Minister, Stanley Bruce, changed the rules. And to add insult to injury, immediately after he changed that rule, Australia then borrowed $230 million from where? The Bank of England. And by 1927, they hit the $1 billion budget deficit. So how quick was that? Literally in 3 years, Australia went from this prosperous nation that was building infrastructure, giving people a chance to make their livelihood. And in 3 years, they were already in $1 billion worth of debt. And then the bank turned into the wonderful central banking apparatus, probably because they got in so much debt that they said, let's just join the club. We're never getting out of this. And the final nail in the coffin was 1947. The vote was 55-5 when it vote for this bank to become a member of the IMF, which means it follows all the ARCID-controlled central banks controlled by the Bank of International Settlements. They tell the central banks what to do. I'm just trying to see. The U.S. declared war. So World War I, you guys know. World War I was a huge move to install central bankings. It was to decimate Europe and put them in so much debt that they needed to sign up for a central bank. We talked about the Freemason control Black Hand. World War I was purely to get rid of the monarchies. Germany, Austria, Russia, even though Russia was involved in the war, but they needed to weaken Russia because, as we said, it was so prosperous. And those people were all cousins. The King of England, Tsar, and Kaiser Wilhelm were literal cousins. Isn't that amazing? They're his littler cousin. Destroyed everything his family had with no regard because the bankers told him to do it. Because it was a falsely started war, didn't make any sense. They kept trying to get Germany in, and it was all Bank of England. That's why they went down to Boer. It was also the gold mines, but it was because they knew they could piss off the Germans by hurting their old German people. They also did the same thing in Morocco, I believe. The Germans were late to the colonial game. They didn't really go to these places, and not like Britain, not like France. They didn't have as many like colonies like these other countries did, but they worked well with Morocco. They were honest traders. They were giving them, whatever. And the Sultan he was being blockaded by the French and the British, and the Germans were trying to help him. So this war was a long time planning for the Bank of England. They wanted to knock down Germany, who was surpassing, just like Russia. We were just talking about Germany was surpassing Britain in standard of living and technology. They had the blimps, which they inevitably stole the intellectual property of that, sold it to the American military, then sold it again. Just disgusting. But anyway, so that was World War I. That was the reason. And the last topic we're doing is the Bank of International Settlements. So the original purpose, what comes up on Google for Bank of International Settlements. Bank of International Settlements. Let's see what comes up. Oh, here's this beautiful building. It looks like a power plant. Nice. I think it's 18 floors. So any gematria people, I don't know what that means. But anyway, so the original purpose of this power plant was to facilitate German reparation payments from the Treaty of Versailles after World War I. But by the Great Depression, with the Great Depression, the Nazis taking power in 33, all these payments cease to exist. See, they just stop. They're not happening. There's more important things than just robbing a country, beating it down blindly. So the Bank of International Settlements, they had to find a new purpose. What's their, they're in the boardroom thinking, shit, we got to come up with a reason why we exist. What are we going to come up with? And once a government program, especially a banking government program, starts, it needs to grow or it will cease to exist. All government programs, if that's their life cycle, they, if they don't grow the program, it's going to die. So that is why government only gets bigger, because if it stayed the same or got smaller, eventually people would say, we don't need this at all. Or we don't need their help in all these different areas. So the Bank of International Settlement, when they come up with their boardroom, they said, dude, let's say we're fostering monetary cooperation. What the hell does that mean? I would say to somebody, what do you do? Oh, we facilitate monetary cooperation. What the hell does that mean? I have something, you want it, you buy it. They promised the people, if you do this, if you allow us into your country, you will never have another depression again. You'll never have another stock market panic. We promise. Reality, though, it directs the centrally planned global financial system through each of the country's central banks. So it's the coach. All these banks, it's the bank of banks, right? The BIS, they tell every country's central bank how to act, how to respond, what to do, exchange rates, blah, 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 blah. So they're the top dog. Their HQ is located in Basel, Switzerland, and it is an unelected, unaccountable central bank of the central bankers, complete immunity from national laws, from taxation. It even has its own police force. It's a lot like the Vatican in that sense of secrecy, archives, documents, everything is locked down. There is no ability to request or review what they talk about. And I say this all the time, but anytime something is secret, it's not secret because they're doing such amazing things for the world that they don't want to be asked for their autograph, right? It is secret because they're doing something bad that the public, that they don't want them to know. That's what a secret is. There isn't like, there is maybe like 2% of all secrets are positive secrets. It's bad. And especially between a government and a bank for the people it supposedly represents, secrecy is not needed in any way. Transparency is needed. Their bi-monthly meetings held in complete secrecy. No minutes are kept. No one's allowed in. They don't even allow cleaners into the office where these meetings take place because of fear that they'll leak minutes or leak whatever they talked about. And again, they're like quote functions, facilitating collaboration among central banks, promoting financial stability, research policy issues. Again, just a bunch of mumbo jumbo. They're there to steal, pillage wealth from everybody. The real goal is to dominate the political system of each country, make sure all of the banks are acting in lockstep with what they demand. They want, their end goal is a single world currency, a one world economic system, and a global governance that national laws are no longer relevant. They don't want guns in the public hands. That's why they are hitting America so hard. And this comes, the BIS is a huge part of this losing rights, this tyrannical step-by-step, the totalitarian tiptoe, as David Icke calls it. That's what the BIS is going for. They want you on government subsidies, dejected, porn addicted, fast food eating, bug eating person. And now I thought about this aspect a lot. So this was really interesting. Why did colonialism end? And I don't know if you guys ever thought of this. Like, why would, you know, all Germany or France, Britain, all these countries who had colonies all over the world that were providing them wealth, India, for example, why did they stop? Was it because they just grew a heart? Well, we know that's not the case. We know that they could make any lie sound good. They could have told their public, oh, these were just there to keep stability in the country, protect. I mean, all these things. But why did colonialism end? Well, colonial ended because of like the Bank of International, these central banking, because they realized it was actually costing them more money to subdue the populace, to control the populace. What's better than that, than having to maintain a military and things like that? What you do is you say, okay, yeah, go on your own. You're going to need some money, aren't you? Right? Well, why don't you put a central bank in there? Well, actually, why, if you don't want to do that, we'll give you a loan. We'll put you at 5% interest and we'll give you as much as you want. They know that these third world countries will in no way be able to pay back the loan. And then they come in and now they own your natural resources. It's a tale as old as time. And that's why colonialism ended, though. It just wasn't fiscally, financially stable. This was easier. It's easier to enslave a populace when they don't even know they're enslaved. And that's what they did. The central bank proliferation after World War II went from 15 to 156 countries. Again, that's why World War II happened. It was to remove, like, the bank, Japan didn't have no central bank. They wanted Japan. Italy, no central bank. The eight that were in Belgium, Greece. Anyway, but yeah, regular people can't understand that. They could never conclude or come up, you know, think, oh, wow, these wars, a lot of times a central bank comes in right after it. Why aren't these third world countries getting any better that are richer with resources? It's because of the central banks. It's not because these people don't know how to govern themselves. It's because corruption is so high. Violence is so out of control because the central bank is looting the resources. All right, almost done here. Federal Reserve, between 1820 and 1910, the dollar retained its purchasing power. For 90 years, even with some rises in the Civil War, but for 90 years, the dollar without the central bank held on to their wealth. A dollar was still worth a dollar in 90 years. That is insane. That is insane. Without the help of these expert bankers. It took the Fed 6 years in 1914 to 1920 to reduce the dollar by 56%. So for 90 years, it maintained its wealth. Six years after the start of the Fed, it lost 56% of the value. To rein in inflation, we don't know where it's coming from. Why is this happening? We're the experts. Don't worry, we'll fix it. The secret bankers held a meeting in 1920 in DC. They changed like these bond rates, selling bonds, called in loans, and this killed the agriculture community in America. It ruinously low levels, just their costs soared. This was done purposely to destroy the agricultural sector. This was purpose because they don't want you providing for yourself. So even in 1920, they knew we need to get people dependent on the system. There's too many farmers in America. We need to knock them down. And this is what they did. So they ruined 20% of the farmers went under. They couldn't afford to farm anymore. They had to go on government subsidies or just starve, go to the city and work in a factory. So all this was happening. And then 1921, the Fed said, oops, sorry about that. We didn't mean to. Oh, we don't know why that happened. Just a perfect storm. And they changed the rules, reversing the policy, which says to me again, this was a transfer of wealth. They wanted to remove individual, you know, independent people. America were the founders of, you know, independence and living, you know, just doing what you want. That's what America was built on. They needed to stop that. So they caught a bunch there. And then in 1927, we're getting close to something, right? In 1927, the banksters decided, let's create a little boom in the economy. People will love it. So 11 of the 12 Federal Reserve Banks of America said, do not do this economic policy. It's a bad idea. Probably by the honest bankers there. They printed some $2 billion new dollars. Did it go to those farmers that they just stole the farms of? Did it go to the poor people in the city? No, it all went right into the stock exchange in 1927. $2 billion went to the stock exchange. Now, what does that sound like to you? It sounds a lot like me to the Trump bucks and all the printing that's been going on recently. Do you and I see it? No, it goes straight into the stock market. That's why the stock market has been insane until a week ago. But for all of COVID after about March 7th when it crashed, It's been so high, record highs all over the board. Does that translate to regular people's wallets or bank accounts? No, all that new printed money goes right to the top dogs. And in 1927, the price earning ratio went from 20 to 50. I don't know what that means. But the news and experts in 1927 said, this is a new era of prosperity. Get into the stock market. People are making millions. You will make bank and be rich for just investing your money. And all these people invested the money. And then in 1929, Paul Warburg, an evil son of a bitch, Freemason, founder of the Fed, advised all of his buddies and big business buddies to pull their money. Also did Andrew Mellon, because they knew something was about to happen. They said, get out of the market and sell it short. This is exactly what happened in before COVID, when the congressmen and rich people all pulled their money. This is like in 9/11, when Warren Buffett shorted airlines, who never invest in airlines, and casinos. He made these huge short calls or put options. Whoever knows stock, whatever they're called, on those things, which crashed after 9/11, and he made tons of money. That's exactly what Paul Warburg and Andrew Mellon did. 5 months later, all this people shorting and pulling the stocks, thousands of orders arrived on New York Stock Exchange to sell once the regular people started hearing that all the big dogs were selling, and their plan worked perfectly. The Great Depression kicked off full swing. And listen to these facts. By 1932, securities had fallen 83%, from $89 billion to $15 billion. From that new era of prosperity, 83% gone. One of the hugest transfers of wealth ever in this world, as we ever seen. 24,000 banks, 10 crushed. And that's local credit unions, local banks, leaving their depositors penniless. You had money in that bank? I mean, almost 50% of all banks lost everything you owned. 200,000 companies filed for bankruptcy. 8.3 million people were thrown to the streets. Within 3 years, 25% of the populace was unemployed, all created purposely by the bankers. The national income of the U.S. declined by 40% from $81 billion to, in 1927, the era of prosperity, to $48 billion in 32. 3 million people died of starvation, malnutrition, infectious disease, suicides, starvation. This is what the bankers think of us. They don't care. The experts don't care. I want to shake people that think that the people on the TV care about you. How many examples do you effing need? They don't. They don't care if your family lives or dies. But how many buckets did LeBron James make last night? That's important. The Fed tricked the public, fleecing the people out of billions and trillions. I mean, they have the profits from all the interest we pay them to pay off all of our debt. All of the $30 trillion, we've paid that in interest. And we should require them to do it. Okay, I wanted to get to last thing I wanted to talk about was the Central Bank of Libya. So I briefly talked about when we started the show, but Libya from 1511 to 1911, controlled by Ottoman Empire, then Italy from 1911 to 43, then military of Britain and France, 43 to 51. There was a central bank they installed. Of course they did, because it's the Bank of England, from 56 to 69, until a bloody coup happened, leaving Gaddafi in power. Described in the mainstream media as a horrible, terrible dictator, a blood-sucking monster, the most evil man in the world. Well, really? Well, you should have informed the population of Libya, because 90% of them supported Gaddafi. He had, and let's just do what he did. Without a central bank, he got rid of it because of the revolution. Free education. Students were paid average salary for whatever they were studying. Free healthcare. Free housing. Newlywed couples would get $50,000 from the government in 19, not a little bit, again, before our inflated dollars, when $50,000 was probably be equivalent to $70,000 today. Automobiles were sold at factory cost prices. Private loans, interest-free. portion of profits from the oil was paid directly into every citizen's bank account. Farmers got free land, seed, animals, full employment was offered to those who were unemployed. They had the highest life expectancy of Africa, 82% literacy rate, highest in Africa, higher human rights ranking than the United States by, and this is not me just making this up or the author, it's by like one of these sick liberal progressive organizations. America was ranked 62. Libya was ranked number one, and one's the best. Built huge water purifying aquifer, which cost $25 billion, financed without a single foreign loan. Libya had literally the only central bank run on genuine state banking lines. So it's like Imperial Russia's state bank. And this is why the war was started, or why the overthrowing of him had to happen. The banksters want a sad, poor, desperate, turn to drugs or alcohol, TV to ease the pain of knowing something isn't right. Saddam Hussein had a similar trajectory, similar thing. He refused to pay it in euros for his oil. Eventually, because we put him in there, he said, you know, I got all this power. Every citizen, somebody had to put a stop to that nonsense. I know. Isn't that insane, though? Congratulations. Here's $50,000 for you marrying your wife to start your journey. Or just insane that you would get a profit of whatever they were making on the oil. But okay. And then last thing, in 2010, Gaddafi, he announced the gold dinar as the replacement of all foreign transactions. He doesn't want paid in US. The gold dinar is their money. And it was a combo. It wasn't a pure gold standard. It was like an oil gold standard and all this stuff that happened, you know, that I just told you about how amazing it was going for him and for Libyans. In 2010, Libya had 144 tons of gold. Real wealth. And you know the rest of the story. Things get too good, they slaughter him. They said he is a dictator, all those evil things in the press, they hammered him. And I don't know what's true or not, because that's the, but all I can tell you is how successfully they were economically, how successfully they were doing all of these positive things for their citizens. But I'm supposed to believe that he's also secretly slaughtering people in dark torture chambers. But as you know, they kill him. I think Hillary Clinton had a lot to do with his debt, and that's it. So there's three countries left, I think, North Korea, Cuba, and Iran, that do not have a central bank, and they will, or they'll keep them without a central bank to be viewed as the enemy constantly. They know that none of these countries could ever compete with us militarily, so but they like to use it to scare the public. So what can you take from this? How do we fight back against these parasites? Don't take out big loans. You don't need a fancy car. I drive a Subaru, an old Subaru, 2011, and I love it. I get made fun of. People, my Liv Allen calls it a you know, drive Subarus, Outbacks. And I love it, dude. We don't need fancy stuff. We don't need the new iPhone. They want us in debt. They want us so far in debt that the only option is to survive on government subsidies. And we always talk about this. Try to become independent. Family folk, you have huge families, make friends with your community, with our community on the internet, learn things. David, who is not here tonight, maybe he'll listen. He's, you know, going to teach me some things about farming and stuff like that. That's how we fight back. Because once enough people don't take their loans, that's how they get them. We get them in trouble. And they're idiots that run this show. We know that. Our leaders are literal idiots. Their thing can crumble if enough of us do the right thing, which is praying, hard work, love, family, et cetera, et cetera. So I am Jack Allen. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Conspiracy or just a coincidence? Go follow me at Kojak Podcast. And I really look forward to, and thanks for all the reviews. If you can subscribe, blah, 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 support the show. All the links are in the show notes. And I'll publish this maybe tomorrow or maybe tonight. We'll see. But thanks for joining Carl, Brian, Wheez. Whoever else was watching, thanks for commenting, Jesse, and much love. God bless. We'll talk soon. I'm out. Peace.